This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen here. Joel is unfortunately not going to be with us today because seasonal allergies have knocked out his voice, which I know sounds really remarkable because he's got this big booming voice, but he can't make a whisper right now. So unfortunately, he's going to have to sit out this week. But we have a really great guest rejoining me this week because this is a guy I first interviewed back in December 2012 and then later in February 2013 who has, I think, probably the most remarkable story I've ever heard in all the time I've been doing the show and actually in all of my life. His name is David Bennett, and he should be dead now multiple times. But he insists on being alive, so we figure, well, if he's going to be alive, he might as well join us. So, David, thank you for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, Walt. That's a great introduction.
Well, you have a great story. For people who haven't heard the old interviews, just give a quick synopsis of your story.
Yeah, well, in 1983, I used to be the chief engineer of a research vessel. We did underwater exploration, that sort of thing. And I got caught in a storm, but we were in a small Zodiac. We were trying to come back, bring some people into the harbor. But we got caught in this storm, and a 25 to 30 foot wave actually capsized us, and I was thrown into the water.
Wow.
And so in 25, 30 foot seas.
Right.
And being tumbled and tossed like a rag doll, and expecting that my life vest would bring me up to the surface, but it didn't, and I drowned. Mm. And so I found myself at first in this absolute darkness, but it was interesting because this darkness had
And I just want to qualify, you were actually dead at this point.
Yeah, well, I had drowned. I had drowned.
Because you can drown without actually dying, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. But it's kind of interesting. In this darkness, it feels like there's more than just the void, you know, the emptiness. It felt like I was connected to something greater. And that's when I saw the light. And I felt myself moving toward the light.
That sounds almost like a religious experience.
Yeah, it does in a way, you know. And that's part of the reason. I was just on a television show, The Story of God, with Morgan Freeman, because they wanted to hear my experience with God.
Sure.
Because this light that I saw, as I got closer, it looked like millions upon millions of fragments of light.
Wow.
And they were all in union. You know, they were. Moving and dancing but they seemed like they were all part of one mind, you know. And then fragments of that light broke away, came and greeted me. They welcomed me home, and there was such a feeling of love and acceptance that, I mean, I was in gaga awe of the whole situation.
Oh my.
but they greeted me, and eventually there were a dozen of these light beings that were there, and they invited me to review my life. And in that life review, I saw my life, but I saw it in kind of a unique way. It wasn't like sitting down and watching a movie. It was more like I was reliving my life, but only I was seeing it not only through my perceptions, but also from everyone I'd ever interacted with through their perception. So it was like my consciousness split into multiple streams of consciousness at the same time, and I could view and experience this, my life, in all these different ways. So I got to feel how I affected people, you know.
That's got to be overwhelming.
It is. It's in humbling. The word I have to say is humbling, because you start to appreciate how interconnected we are in this world and how much we affect people. We don't realize how much what we do on a day-to-day basis, how it affects other people. And so you know, when you're angry, you know, how that energy actually affects them. And when you're do something with loving intention, how that energy affects them. And so I got to see, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly of my life. And like I said, it was incredibly humbling. But not only was I experiencing it, but my soul family was experiencing it in the same way I was.
And what exactly is a soul family?
Well, those are those light beings that greeted me. I call them my soul family because they aren't anybody that was living, you know, with me in this life, but they were people that I believe that I have spent lifetimes with.
Okay,
and so I call them family because to me they. When they welcomed me home, I recognized them as a family, and they felt more like family than anything I've experienced here in this physical world.
Wow!
So I call them my soul family, and they continue to communicate with me even to this day, and which is kind of nice. It's very, very nice actually. It's very loving, and we saw my life review, but then we also saw part of my future. It was kind of interesting because in my life review, where I was reliving my life, that part of the review was very crystal clear. You know what I mean? It was laser crisp. But then when we went past my drowning and into my future, it was a little – it wasn't as sharp. It wasn't as clear. It was like looking down a corridor of potential.
So what we're talking about here is what your life – could have been.
Could be, yes. What my life could be. Mm-hmm. And I call it potentials, all the future potentials. So, you know, I could go down the corridor, the straight line, or if I veered off to the right or the left, it was a little hazier. It wasn't as clear. It was like the universe hadn't aligned everything for me if I went this way or that way off of the main path that was laid out for me.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting, a little disorienting, but a little.
Yeah, whole thing is disorienting, for goodness sake.
But you know, my family just supported me. They loved me through all of this. But then the light itself, which I perceived as God, the light itself, all these millions of fragments of light, all in unison, spoke, and they said, "This is not your time. You must return." And it just...
That's got to be completely overwhelming. I mean, maybe humbling, but that's got to be overwhelming.
The funny thing was though, I was like, I don't want to go back. So I argued with what I perceived as God. I argued with God and said, I don't want to go back. I want to stay here. I'm feeling loved. I'm welcomed.
I'm hearing in my head from the musical Peter Pan, I won't grow up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't want to go back. I don't want to have a miserable life. I don't want to be an adult. Because it was kind of like arguing with a warm, loving, parental essence, you know. But the light spoke again and said, "No, you must return. You have a purpose." And that word purpose just so resonated in my being, and which caused me to kind of focus my consciousness on the thought of purpose. And with that, because you're in that expanded awareness of being connected to like almost every being that ever was and every being that ever will be, with that expanded awareness, I understood that purpose. And so I agreed, you know, with understanding it, you just naturally fall into agreement. Yeah, I agree. You know, I could fulfill a purpose. And when I agreed, I found myself back outside my body, and there was this kind of a miraculous way that I was resuscitated, and I was brought back to this earth where I immediately couldn't recall what that purpose was, and that was the most frustrating thing in the world. purpose, what is this?
It's like
purpose?
Right on the tip of your tongue, right?
Yes, exactly. It's like there's little flashes of of memory that it's like I could remember the near-death experience. I could remember the life review. I could remember being told I had to come back and that I had a purpose. But then the understanding of the purpose didn't come back with me.
If it were me, I think I'd be upset. Like, this thing needs repair. I can remember everything except the most important one. We got to do something about this going forward, guys.
Well, you do go through that. It's part of, you know, when you come back, you're like, what the heck? You know, how do I talk about it? Who do I tell? Who do I trust to tell?
Mm. You know, thing right there.
Yeah, because, you know, you're afraid that people are going to think, man, you need the white jacket.
Gee, I wonder why.
You know? Yeah, you know, and so you're very cautious about who you tell at first.
Yeah, sure.
But then also you are angry about, you know, if you're angry and deflated and humbled all at the same time. So you're going through all these emotions of what do I do with this, and how do I go on with my life, you know? And the thing that really blew my gaskets, you might say, was I was an engineer. So I saw things in kind of black and white. And after this experience, I started getting, like, I called them downloads, because I would get this information. It wasn't anything that I'd studied. It wasn't anything that I'd learned in life. But suddenly I would have this knowing, this understanding of either it could be something about someone I'm talking to. I could have, you know, personal information about them that I had no way of knowing. Or it could be something like on the ship that I was a chief engineer, I would understand that there was going to be a failure in a system or something like that before it would happen. Mm. Things like that, you know. And so which I had no real way of knowing or understanding some of these things. So I didn't quite – that really kind of freaked me out. And then also I started seeing other people's light, their light essence, and I could see it in their eyes.
Wow.
And auras. And at the time I didn't even know what an aura was, so I called it life force energies because I was like, what is this?
You know? From my understanding of an aura, that is what it is.
It is, yeah. But I mean at the time I didn't have the word aura in my vocabulary.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I didn't know what it was, sure. So I just called it internally, I was calling it, you know, this life force energy, and but it was freaking me out because I had before this experience, I didn't have any of these abilities, and like suddenly this was turned on in my body, and I wanted my old life back.
Mm.
You know, it just freaked me out. I didn't know who the heck do you talk to, you know. If I started to talk about this stuff with my shipmates at the time, they'd have thought I was absolutely loony.
Important to note that if you were to bring that up today as a first-time experience, it probably would be accepted a lot more. This was the 1980s.
The
1980s would have been a lot less forgiving about this kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And the job that we did on this ship, we were, you know, commercial divers. We did underwater exploration. We put each other's lives in each other's hands every day. So to talk about death and dying was really a taboo subject.
Mm.
You know, it's just something you just didn't talk about. We were a bunch of, you know, adrenaline junkie.
Well, of course you were. You were working on a ship.
Yeah, guys, you know, so it was just it wasn't something that I felt safe or secure in bringing up with them. I did try to bring it up with my first wife, and it didn't go well. And so then I figured, you know, I can't talk about these things.
Yeah.
So I had
Of course.
And I didn't know, you know, mine happened in 83, but I didn't know that there was all this research that had already started into near-death experiences. I didn't even know there was a term near-death experiences because I was kind of isolated and out to sea most of, you know, 9 months
literally,
out of the year.
Literally out to sea.
Yeah, 9 months of the year I was out to sea. And back in the 80s, we didn't have the type of shipboard communications they have today where you can get the internet now. And
right.
You know, it's such a different world at sea now than it was back in the 80s.
Sure.
So it was tough and very isolating.
You were isolated in two ways. It's like you were isolated in your isolation.
Yeah. Well, and also myself. I isolated myself by not being able to talk to other people about it.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 11 years later that I actually started communicating to some, you know, a group of people that I felt safe with.
Wow.
So it took that long. But during that 11 years, I had integrated quite a bit from this experience. I didn't realize how much I had changed.
So was more of it coming back to you? Is that what it was? Or you just were making more sense out of it?
Well, it's I had a second experience
where
I relived it. And in that second experience, it was kind of like I had taken the memory of this experience and I had tried to shove it so far back in my head that I wrapped it up in a big old box and like took duct tape and wrapped the box with duct tape,
right,
and big old magic marker, and said, "Do not open."
Yes, and right.
As far back in my memory
Pandora's
as I could.
Pandora's box here.
Yeah, I was trying to get on with my life and forget about it, but you can't. That's the problem with these types of experiences. You really can't, because it's present. It's one of those things that stays present with you.
Sure.
So what I did was I took what I could deal with, because the whole concept of talking to God and my soul family, that frightened me, you know.
Understandably.
And I didn't know how to deal with that, so that is what I put in the box and tried to hide.
Yeah.
But the other elements of the life review, like after seeing yourself that clearly, I came to a new acceptance of who I was, and not only that, but I saw how that interaction with everybody and every situation in life, it gave me a new level of tolerance.
So interestingly enough, despite the fact that you were resisting it, the transformation was taking place anyway.
Yes, it was, and I didn't even realize. It was because I had to learn how to deal with these downloads, this new intuitive sense that had opened up and blossomed in my life. So,
and I got to ask you call them downloads. Today a person would know what a download is. Back then I doubt that 1 in 100 knew what a download was. Is that the way you thought of it back then, as a download?
I was an engineer. So
you did. So
yes,
if you had said download, even that would have alienated people.
Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah. Because I was I worked with computer systems on the ship and stuff as the chief engineer. So I was involved with developing a lot of satellite navigation, and when we would put a submarine on the bottom, we would use these computer plotters to exactly position within, you know, a few feet of the ocean floor where exactly we were and stuff like that. So
right.
I worked with a lot of computer technology back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, so I use that type of terminology, you know, download, things like that. But because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know so what I did as a good engineer is I would, you know, something that is unknown, I would test it. You know, is this information veridical? Is it something that is real? Is it something – because it isn't anything I'd learned in school. Wasn't anything I'd learned, you know, I'd lived in life.
It's actually counter to a lot of things you learned.
Yeah, exactly, and which was what was had knocked me off center quite a bit.
Of course, yeah.
So in testing it and realizing that this was reliable information, I began to trust it and I began to go with it. It took time, but I became comfortable with it, and that was part of that transformation too during that 11 years. So I started, you know. But again, I wasn't telling anybody that I'd had this experience. And so I would have to hide, you know. I would have to hide from people in ways, because they would, you know, "Dave, how did you know this?" And you know, you'd brush it off like, "Oh, you know, that comes with experience." You know, I mean, you know, it's funny how you it's part of our human nature sometimes because in life we put on these personas a lot of times,
right.
You know, that we want people to see us as, you know, "I'm a normal guy living a normal life," you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, they're defense mechanisms. And they're,
exactly.
They're
so,
normal.
Yeah.
They're part of our existence, because that's how we protect the essence of who we are.
Exactly, because we don't want people to be critical of us.
Right.
We don't want people to criticize us or to demean us.
Or even worse, to do it to ourselves.
And exactly, and a lot of times we do that to ourselves.
Yeah.
So, but this experience had woken up all this stuff in me, and I was, you know, so I would cover for, you know, this suddenly, you know, because, you know, like for one example, there was a failure on the ship. It was a major failure in a big way, and I knew it was coming. I had no indication because I kept checking the it was actually a reduction gear, and a reduction gear failed when we were on a job. And but I knew it was coming, and I had actually stocked parts that would not ever be stocked to be able to fix this repair.
Wow.
To make this repair. And so normally it was a severe enough repair that you would fix it in, you know, at dockside or in a shipyard. And but I had actually, so you know, when the actual failure came and I was able to tell the captain, "Oh, captain, we can fix this," you know, he was shocked. You know, he was like, "Well, how the heck?" And it's like, "Well, you know," and you learn how to cover. You know? Sure.
You know, you get a feel for these things.
Yeah. You know, it's like the age of the reduction gear. It made sense. You know, things like that. You know, it's like, you know, which was all hooey. You know.
Right. But you said that you had a second experience.
Yeah, the second experience I was started seeking. I had quit my life at sea. Because there's a funny another thing that happens with experiences like this is you get a you have this overwhelming drive to be more of service, to give back in life. And well, you and I have talked about this. It's how important it is to you know, to live your life and to give back a little bit, you know.
Sure.
And so this that urge, being, you know, 500 miles off the coast most of the time, just I just didn't feel like I was giving back as much as I could. So I quit my life at sea, and I fell in with a group of people that were very spiritual but non-denominational.
Okay. And
they were taking a retreat out to Sedona. And as a boy, I grew up in the Verde Valley, right there where Sedona is, and I thought, well, this would be great. I'll go with these guys, but this is like my old stomping grounds. I'll be able to hike some of the canyons of my youth and stuff like that.
Sure.
Just reconnect and all that. So I was really looking forward to it. And the very first day, the leader had us go up to Bell Rock and do a meditation. And while I was sitting there with my back to Bell Rock and looking out over the canyon, I suddenly – the light came to me in my meditation, and it spoke to me, and it said, you know, and it took me back into the near-death experience, and I relived the whole thing.
Wow.
Drowning, the darkness, the light, the soul family, the life review. Only this time in the life review, I had lived 11 years more.
Right.
So in that part of the life review, I got to see how much I had changed, how much the experience had affected me, and I had changed, which I didn't really perceive myself as changing. But I got to see how much that little bit of change of dealing with acceptance of myself, tolerance of others, living more truthfully, and with an intuitive knowing, how much I had changed and how much greater it had affected other people. So it was coming away from that experience was when, okay, I really have to accept this experience.
Which is a lot. That's a lot to accept.
Yeah. And it created another growth spurt, you might say, a spiritual growth spurt that helped me to see that, you know, we all have, you know, this intrinsic wisdom, and it's which is linked to, you know, that ultimate reality of oneness, and it tells us that everything is interconnected, and that we're all one.
I like that interconnected word. I use that one too.
Yeah, you know, because when we start living our life knowing that and living with that, we start to have a much more positive outcomes, because then, you know, the universe, oneness, unity, whatever you want to call it, God starts to align your things, you know, align things for you to achieve in a more empowering and purposeful way. Okay. And you start to get more hints and more suggestions. and it stimulates your connection to that intrinsic wisdom so that you can realize the wisdom and come to an understanding of how to apply it in your everyday life, you know.
Which is useful to know. Yeah, I mean, really, I don't mean that as a joke. I mean, literally, that knowing how to do that is a way of rechanneling this stuff that you were putting away in that box that you described.
Exactly.
Putting it into your
life.
That
second experience,
vital.
I had kicked the box open.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. You knocked it on the floor.
Yeah, and so then I figured, so what I started calling it my quiet ministry at that point in my life.
Okay.
I said, you know, this could, I don't have to broadcast to the world. I can just start to live by what I'd learned.
And thereby broadcast to the world.
Exactly, but in a quiet way. So to me, it felt like a quiet ministry. I was going to live by what I'd learned and start to apply it on a more try to apply it in all situations, not just, you know, not just in my quiet reflective time, but, you know, in all situations, in my day-to-day interactions, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which you know, it and then I started to see how we have these, you know, the things start to happen, you know, like suddenly, like you'll read a book, okay, and in the book it'll give you some new insight and you're like, wow, that is really great. I don't know what to do with it, but it's really great. And then, son of a gun, during the day, somebody will come up to you or call you or something that is searching for that insight that you just learned, you know, that synchronistic type of things.
That's always cool, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it kind of shows you, oh, yeah, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I started getting that sort of type of response in my life. And I started getting – they almost feel like, you know, little attaboys, you know. you know, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat the small stuff. And just keep trying to live with a more open-hearted way of living, you know, with loving intention. Because I really feel that if we want to manifest a life that is full of purpose and a life that is empowering, that if we can do it with loving intention, that we're sincerely telling the universe, okay, you know, I'm ready, I'm available, use me gently.
Yeah.
Because you know, and you start to, and things start to fall into place, and that's what happened in my life. Things started falling into place.
But then you died a second time.
Yeah.
He just dismisses it like it's nothing.
Yeah, well, it wasn't so nice the second time.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a much more painful because
you want to skip past it?
Well, you know, I mean, we could just say, you know, I developed in 2000 stage 4 lung cancer that metastasized into my spine. It caused a large portion of my thoracic. It ate away part of my thoracic, and the tumor couldn't support the weight of my spine, and my spine collapsed. So.
Mm.
And they found lesions in my hip, my brain, my kidneys. It was the doctors had all said that, you know, I only had weeks to live, and they weren't even going to treat me or anything. And,
wow.
But it was something that I had seen in that life review, in the preview, you know,
uh-huh.
All those potentials. And I saw that I was going to potentially have cancer, but I also saw that I could live beyond it. So I knew it was one of those choice points in life, you know.
Do you want to stick it out?
Yeah, you know, because part of me was like, hey, dude, you can go home.
Yeah, because you knew what that was like. You knew that was wonderful.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, man, I can go home. But then there was the other part of where I was starting to understand a little bit more of my purpose by this point, because I'd worked with, you know, this was many years after my near-death experience, from 83 to 2000, you know. So I had and I'd had a number of spiritual experiences, so I – you know, I kept growing. So I had an understanding that this is also an opportunity, because I knew I could live past this. Even though the doctors, everybody was saying, oh, God, you're dying, dude. You know? everybody was like, you're on death's door. And I was saying, well, but I could really get past this. And
which sounds to the average person like you're crazy.
Yeah, it does. In fact, you know, if you look at Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's, you know, stages of grief, you know, that they use
in therapeutic situations,
exactly, with patients like this where you have a terminal diagnosis.
Right.
They immediately expect you to go into denial.
Right.
But because of the near-death experience and knowing my future, I knew that I was going to live beyond it, so I immediately came to acceptance with the deal that I was going to have to deal with the cancer.
Which probably freaked them out.
Yeah, so I had kind of leapfrogged from, you know, from denial and arguing and all of the steps, you know, right to acceptance, which is the final stage. And so they all thought I'm in denial and I'm in acceptance, you know, and it was kind of like it was. And then I went through another kind of life review during that, but it's kind of interesting when you have a diagnosis like that. It gives you a sense. There's a sudden sense of clarity. Well, let me try to explain this. There's the fog of, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah.
Okay. And you kind of go into this fog, but there's also a
crystal. That's the part that we could all identify with for sure.
Yeah, we all kind of – you get into this like fog. Like I always tell people, you know, if you're diagnosed like this, make sure when you go to the doctor you bring a friend.
Right.
Because when the doctor starts talking, the fog just gets really thick sometimes.
Yeah.
And you just have – especially if you're in cancer and you're going through chemo, there's such a thing called actually chemo fog where you where you actually – it even magnifies the that sense of being foggy. But also – underlying that, there's a crystal clarity of what's important, in your life. And little details and little things don't matter. They kind of get thrown into the fog, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what you know what's absolutely important. And so you focus on that. And that'll bring you out of the fog eventually.
Hmm.
But it's kind of a an odd thing. It's hard to explain, but anybody who's had that diagnosis, they know what I'm talking about. That there's the fog of the diagnosis and all the stuff that's going on, but there's a crystal clarity of what's really important in your life, and so you kind of latch onto that, and that's what brings you out of the fog, and that's what can. But if you, because what I found is again is intention. Intention is so important here. Like my intention was, I'm going to get past this, and I started planning my life beyond the cancer.
Which is a very brave thing to do.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's an attitude that helps your immune system. It helps your body. It helps you when you use empowering thoughts. Positive intentions, loving intentions, you're strengthening your own immune system.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot on the show, particularly in the last year and a half, and on a number of occasions, the actual medical evidence behind that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so to take a defeatist attitude at this stage is only to your detriment, you know. If you want to overcome something of this magnitude, you really do need to because the important thing to realize is in this type of situation is you're part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give your power to the doctors and the medical community.
Right.
You're part of the solution. It's not just, you know, if I give them the power to heal me, I'm only giving, and then only half of the solution is available to me. I need to work with my body, my energy, my my interconnectedness with unity in the universe to work on myself. It's my immune system that has to be you know, that has to attack it. It's my...
And we're talking about a mental shift here, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you have to... You're a part of it. So get involved with your medical treatment. Get involved with your healthcare team. Myself, I used that spiritual guidance because we all have an intuitive knowing. And you're going to have... People are going to come up to you and they're going to say, oh, gee, I've heard that this helps with your diagnosis, or that's going to help with your diagnosis. I had people coming up, and they had all the loving intentions of the world, but they were recommending some things that just wouldn't help me. Mm. Like one wanted me to do some Rolfing techniques, but my spine had flat. You know, I mean, not a good thing to do.
No. Particularly for somebody who's already had to deal with it in chemo.
Yeah, right.
You know. Geez.
So it was like, no, I don't think that'll work for me, but thank you for thank you for thinking of it.
Yeah, that, right.
You know? And just a bunch of other things. You know, but then, you know, people might give you suggestions that, so you have to weigh it against your, you know, your intuitive sense, you know, your own inner guidance.
Right.
That's what I tell people. Use your inner guidance to find outside of the standard medical approaches some alternatives that can help you not only physically but also spiritually and mentally, emotionally.
Which is actually more important.
It is. I really believe the mental and emotional aspect of this is critical. If you can turn around and have that positive mental attitude and know that you can – this is something that is just another obstacle. I don't even like to think of it as a battle. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, like a really good friend of mine sent me a set of professional boxing gloves when he heard I was diagnosed, right? You know, I mean, which is great. You know, I mean, God love him. You know, he was like, yeah, let's get in and battle this, you know. Yeah. But I don't like to think of it as a battle. I like to think of it as just an obstacle. It's just a stone in my path that I have to get over. You know, overcome. And I can, and there's a lot of ways to get past a big boulder in your path. You can either go around it, you can go under it, or you can go over it. And
or you can turn around and walk in the other direction.
Yeah, I don't know, you know,
but you chose not to. You chose to keep going through
or
it.
Or you could just sit in the middle of your path. You could just sit
you
down.
You can do that too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but if you want to get past that obstacle, that's where you use your guidance. What's the easiest way for me to get around it? And me, I like to use like water analogies. You know, water will, when it reaches an obstacle, it'll either try to wear the obstacle down.
Yep.
Or it'll go around it.
Yep. That's what erosion's all about.
Exactly, right? And so I like to, when I think of my path, I think of flowing water.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I like to think of my path.
Okay.
And because now I like to allow my path to unfold. I don't try to purposely put a lot. I like to set loving intentions for my life and then allow the universe to provide the path, the way it's going to unfold. So it's
And obviously you survived all this whole thing, which is remarkable in itself. I mean, that was, what, 16 years ago, and you're still talking with us here on the radio. So, you know, you did a pretty good job surviving it.
Well, what really amazed everybody was within 6 months I was cancer-free.
Which is astonishing.
My doctors were all shocked. They didn't believe it. They wanted to continue, you know, chemo treatments and stuff like that. And I said, no, we're done. And I've been cancer-free ever since. I haven't had any reoccurrence or anything.
Now, cancer-free, let's be specific here. Does that mean that the tumor is gone?
No, the tumors are actually they're just not active anymore.
So you still have the big tumor, it's just not doing anything.
Yeah, it's just taking up space in my lung, you know. So that lung isn't useful, but that part of my lung isn't useful. But it's not active, and I don't perceive it being active, you know.
Which is really the reason why it stays inactive.
Yeah, exactly. Is because I don't listen to other people's reality. When other people were telling me that I was dying and that I only had weeks, that was their reality. It wasn't mine. My reality was that I still have work to do, and my inner guidance was telling me, if you want we, you know, if you want, we will give you the work. And I knew that going through, and a lot of people said, well, why did you go through, if you knew all that, why did you even do traditional medicine? Why don't you just use holistic approaches? And I, and part of the reason I went traditional was my guidance told me to balance out traditional medicine with holistic approaches. My guidance indicated to me that there was a purpose for me to go through the suffering of the chemo and the radiation so that once I got past this, I could talk to people who were going through the same thing. So there's a purpose there for me. And so I agreed. I agreed to go through that suffering. And it was horrendous, I can honestly say. It was a horrendous period in my life.
Now, but, we were going to do this whole section in 10 to 20 minutes. We've taken 40. We've got about 18 minutes left. So let's spend the 18 on what you've been doing since then.
Yeah, well, since then, one thing that happened in that cancer was I started a practice of reflection or contemplation, and it became a daily practice. And I got to see how by using contemplation and reflection, you get to know yourself even better. You bring that love out in your life, and you get to connect with that divine essence within yourself. So I started writing down these contemplations that I was doing, and I put them out on social media every day. And I think I continue to do this to this day. And eventually,
I have to ask. That's got to be one of the best parts of your day.
It is, because you know what it is? I do it in the morning. I get up early in the morning before anybody in the household is awake, and I have that quiet time in the house.
Right.
And I go into a meditative state, a stillness. I start with gratitudes. I give gratitude to everything in my life, whether it's the good, bad, the ugly, whatever. I'm gratitude for all of it, because I realize that all of it plays a part in who I am.
Joel is really big on gratitude, so I'm sure when he hears this part of the broadcast, he's going to say, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Gratitude is key for me, and so I use that actually as part of getting myself to that stillness. I use gratitude to kind of bring me into stillness. There's something about when you give thanks for everything in your life, it's calling out to the divine, and when we call out to the divine, it brings us into a quiet, peaceful state. Now, in this state, I don't have to go into absolute stillness where I'm trying to quiet the mind completely. What I'm doing is I'm creating a sense of peace within my being that allows me then to contemplate a subject. Okay, so a contemplation is where you reflect on thoughts and ideas or remarks or something like that, and you bring that into your stillness, into your meditative state, so that you can work with it, and then it becomes your center focus within that meditation.
Are you selective about what you bring in?
Yes, I am.
What's the criteria?
Well, I kind of go by where life is, you know, like today I need to work a little bit on like yesterday I had a situation that came up, maybe I wasn't as forthcoming, so how can I be more forthcoming with a specific subject or something like that? Or my life is really hectic right now, how can I bring more harmony into my life? Things like that. Okay, and so then
So you're basically reaching out for how do I incorporate positives?
Yes, empowerment. I try to keep it empowering as much as possible. So
because I know that I can easily fall into, and I'm sure other people can fall into, you know, you're doing this kind of meditation, and all the negatives start coming in, and you find yourself dwelling on all the negatives.
Yes. Well, the neat thing is. By starting with gratitude, you're kicking it all off with a very empowering way of looking at everything, even the, like I said, the good, the bad, you know, all together. So by using gratitude as that initial seed, you and coming into peace through gratitude, you have kind of created a tool in your spiritual toolbox to help you, to assist in looking at it more purposefully and authentically. See, because and using joy to look at something, you know, from that peaceful, joyful experience, and it helps you to resonate in more of a more positive outlook. You know, it's interesting.
You use the word authentically too. Why don't you talk about that for like 10 seconds? Why authentically? Yeah.
Well, I really believe that we mentioned earlier about the personas and things that we tend to put on ourselves.
Right.
I really feel, and this is a belief of mine. If it doesn't fit anybody who's listening, you don't have to wear it. But I really believe that those personas are an injustice to everyone we interact with, because we're not allowing them to see who we are authentically. When we put these personas on, it's almost like a little white lie. Okay, it may not be a white lie, but it sometimes, you know, we're trying to make somebody think that we're better in some way than we see ourselves as.
But most often, it's actually a white lie we're telling ourselves. It's not so much what we're telling somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. But we're trying to project that, mm-hmm. and that energy of projection actually. We are projecting an energy to other people, and that's constantly going on. This energetic exchange is constantly going on. So when we're projecting a persona, we're not allowing that person to sense us or interact with us authentically. I really feel authenticity is important in life, because now they get to – and when people feel your authentic being, your authentic essence, they respect it. It's and they may not understand why, but they respect it. The minute I got away from the fear of sharing my experiences and things like that, the minute that I put that away and took off that cloak of persona, that's when people started respecting, well, you've had this experience, I can understand and I can respect that you're, you know, dealing with it.
And that's actually diametrically opposite from what we expect is going to happen when we're in the fear state.
Exactly. You see, the fear state makes us build up these personas for protection, you know. But what really is healthy and what I use in my reflections and contemplations is to be open, because you want that intrinsic wisdom that is a part of your connection to your light essence, your higher consciousness. You want that to come down and link with you in your life. And so when you contemplate on these subjects, it's really interesting, because that synchronicity, like we were talking about earlier, starts to happen more and more. I live my life in a state of synchronicity. It's kind of interesting now. But I actually wrote a book recently. My newest book is called A Voice as Old as Time.
Oh, where's it available? Is it at Amazon?
It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get it as a Kindle, as a Nook. Right. You know, in fact, I really like it as a Kindle, because you can highlight, you know, and just
The little press and highlight thing.
Yeah, yeah, you can go right to it. And the neat thing is I set it up. I arranged the book, the reflections in the book, in a natural progression towards spiritual awakening. So you can kind of use it like bibliography. You just open it up to something and see what it says. Or you can say, what do I need to work on today? You know, I set up 44 different chapters, you know, so becoming aware, fearlessness, joy and wonder, inspiration, heart-minded relationships, integrity, enlightenment, being, untapping your potentials, things like that, so that you can, you know, you can say, "Oh, this is where I'm at right now," and that's kind of what I do. Is I look at where am I right now? What is it that I need to work on in my contemplation? And then I work on that, or I might read a phrase, and I broke each page is its own contemplation. But you can actually take one paragraph of that page and just work on that for a day or a week. And there's some in there you may want to work on for months, you know. But it's one of those things that you start to, you know, you bring that out of your contemplation, out of your stillness, into your day. and you start to work with it in your interactions. And you get to see how suddenly things in life start to turn around. So I use contemplation and gratitude as my way of starting my day. And I've noticed that when I do a gratitude and contemplation at the beginning of the day, my day starts out with that positive first step, and it continues.
It has a carrying effect, doesn't it?
It does. It carries
out you through the day.
Yeah. And when I don't do it, the day seems a little more hectic. It seems disjointed. It doesn't seem to flow as well, you know, things like that. So I really love my spiritual practice. And I really encourage people to develop some form. You don't have to do contemplation, whatever, because not one practice is custom fit to everybody. You know what I mean? Everybody can, you know, I encourage people to create a practice that fits them, that makes their heart sing. You know, because we all have creative ways of living life, you know, and use your own creativity to develop your spiritual practice. Because when you're using creativity, you're actually, where does inspiration come from? It comes from the divine, you know, and you're touching the divine anytime you use inspiration. So that creativeness that we all have, use that, you know. So if music is something that you're creative with, use that in your spiritual practice. If it's, you know, anything that really, really makes your heart sing.
It comes down to what motivates you, what makes you feel good, what gets you going.
Yeah, because that's what's going to give your spiritual practice life.
Mm.
You know, that's what's going to make it.
It's also going to make you want to do it tomorrow and the next
exactly.
day.
Exactly. And that helps you then to make it a part of your day. You'll be looking forward to your spiritual practice.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, rather than it being, oh, I got to get up 15 minutes early so I can meditate, or, you know, oh, I got to carve out some time. It's funny. We have a lot of time in our day-to-day life, a lot of time that's available to us. It just in the shower, you know, on the pot, anywhere. There's places that you can actually work on your spirituality, you know. It's just we tend to fill them with other stuff, you know, our monkey mind and things like that.
Oh, yeah. And when you're doing your gratitude thing, what do you like to focus on? Because I'm sure it's going to be different for everybody. So where do you take yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I have a routine, and I've followed the same routine. Usually routines have to evolve in life.
Mm-hmm.
They usually don't work all the time. But I have one routine that I use that I focus – I look at – I attribute positive attributes to the four directions, and then I give gratitude to Mother Earth and Father Sky. So it's very Native American, because
yeah.
I had a period of time in my life where I was kind of adopted by these grandmothers that helped me to develop a practice in my teens.
Okay.
And so I use this. So when I look to the West, I look at the beginning and ends of circles and cycles in my life and things like that. And so that's where I call out my spirit. And when I look to the North, I look at introspection, and I look at, you know, things like that. So I give gratitude to, you know, how life is unfolding. The West, of course, is my kind of my road, my path in life, and any obstacles that may be there, I look at them and I'm grateful for the obstacle and for the opportunity to learn how to overcome them. And then you know, the South, I look at my abundance. You know, what are the types of things in life that have brought me abundance, and how can I share them? How can I give back? You know, so like my abundance of spiritual practice, and how can I share that? And then, you know, Father Sky, I look at the winds. You know, I speak my truth upon the winds, and how do I carry that? And then, you know, Mother Earth, I look at respect, because Mother Earth, we need to respect her, and we need to walk with her in a respectful manner. So you can take your entire day and kind of break it out into those, you know, all those directions, and plug in, you know, okay, this is going on in my life, and I could use more respect, or I could use more, you know, more tolerance, more spiritual intervention, things like that.
And an important takeaway here is this is what's meaningful for you to do it this way. It's not like you're saying everybody has to do it this way.
No. This is just the way I do it. It's the way I practice. And it helps me to kind of focus it. I'm starting to put some of the contemplations. I'm developing some podcasts. It's called Contemplative Living on Podbean. And if anybody's interested, I've just started. I did an introduction podcast, and I'll be adding a bunch more on different subjects. You know, like harmony and you know, consciousness and things like that, awakening, things like that.
Very cool. Well, we've got about 4 more minutes left, so let's try to sum this up, which is always impossible whenever I talk to you, because there is so much meat that you give us. Like, where do I begin? You know?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I guess I'd say begin with where we are right now. What's your next thing, do you think?
My next thing?
Yeah, what's your next step that you're aiming at?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I because I just moved to Virginia Beach, I'm kind of like in a new phase in life, and I'm really allowing my life to unfold here. I'm trying not to project too much.
So you really don't think about what's next. You let it come.
No, I don't. I like to allow things to come to me.
Okay.
And I don't underestimate the power of the universe to align things to move you in different ways. Like that television show that just happened was the story of Guy with Morgan Freeman. That just came out of the sky. I had no intention of doing that. In fact, I was trying to help them find another experiencer and to do that show, so it just kind of worked out that way. but I really think you put everything you have into this life, you know, because the lessons there with every breath that we take, there's something for us to breathe in and to breathe out. You know, I believe breath holds the possibility of all our futures. You know, there's an opportunity to share, to teach. And with every breath, we celebrate the joy of living, you know, and every moment of ever-expanding change. That's a part of who we are. And we have all the creative power of the universe in our hands. And we just have to dare to be all that we have and all that we are within ourselves.
What a fantastic message that is. Before I lose you, tell everybody again, where can they find the book? Okay. What is the name of the book again?
Okay, the new book is Voice as Old as Time, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere online that you can buy books. And also, if you want to know more about the near-death experiences and the transformation it caused in my life, there's a book called Voyage of Purpose. And they're all by me, David Bennett. And if you want to go to my website, you can find links to all this stuff that we're talking about on my website. It's dharmatalks.com, DharmaTalks. DharmaTalks.com.
I wish I had another hour. I want to talk about a voice as old as time for like another hour, because that alone sounds like a great topic.
Yeah, it is. It's I'm beginning to teach a little bit on contemplation as well. I'm thinking about doing some workshops there, but if that comes to be, it'll come to be.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll talk with Joel. I suspect he'd be interested in it too. Maybe at some point we do have you back just to talk about that. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Yeah, right. Because you can apply that to the law of attraction so easily.
Oh, yeah. Well, the law of attraction kind of flows throughout your entire narrative here.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does. David, thank you so much for joining me again. I mean, every time I interview, it's wonderful talking with you. My spirit just grows just hearing you talk. It's amazing. So your life mission to come back here, I can tell you it's definitely touched me. I'm sure it's touching the readers. I'm sure it's touching Joel. And I'm sure it's touching many, many other people too. So thank you for doing what you do.
Well, thank you, Walt, for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure.
We'll have to have you back again. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Clap along if you feel like a room without a
friends to you. Don't waste your time.